Hey, Bomb Squad. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, the podcast that's all about everybody's favorite two subjects, women and food. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, coming to you from Brooklyn, New York. Speaking of New York, today we have two of the coolest folks in the city joining me to chat, Cicely Sierra and Mavis J. Sanders, the founders of Food Plus People. They have a pop-up that's opening today at Maison Yaki in Brooklyn as part of the restaurant's Black Entrepreneur Series. Get your pens out. It's open September 4th through 6th and September 9th through 13th. Their menu, no surprise, is fab and features meatloaf burgers, fried chicken and pancakes, not waffles, you'll soon find out why, black-eyed pea salad, and more. You can also buy their Food Plus People products at the pop-up, say that three times fast, including their hot sauces and seasoned flours. Cicely and Mavis J are also the hosts of Drink Tank, a fun and very lively IG live show on the Black Food Folks Instagram account. I hope you check it out. Today's show is supported by Breyers Carb Smart. Thank you to the folks at Breyers for supporting Radio Cherry Bomb all summer long. What else is going on? Well, are you an official Cherry Bomb member? We'll have our first virtual membership meeting happening later this month. Stay tuned for details. If you'd like to join, check out the members section on cherrybomb.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out our brand new feature, Open Book. It's a behind-the-scenes look at how the newest cookbooks come together, from the author's mood boards to how they got their deals, to the tools and ingredients they used most during the making of their books. The first book featured is Hetty McKinnon's Community. A cult classic in Australia, it was finally launched for the very first time here in America. And thank you to Cherry Bomb's Audrey Payne, who is the editor of our cookbook section and put all of this together. We'll be right back with Cicely and Mavis J after this word from Breyers Carb Smart. As someone who thinks that ice cream should be a food group, I'm very happy that today's episode is supported by our friends at Breyers Ice Cream. Breyers is America's number one ice cream brand, and I'm pretty sure my family of Breyers fanatics helped contribute to that top ranking. Did you know that Breyers has a special treat that won't undo your day? It's called Breyers Carb Smart, and it comes in tubs and bars and in great flavors like mint fudge and caramel swirl. There's even a flavor called Almond Bar that comes covered in an almond-studded chocolate shell. And who doesn't love a chocolate shell? One thing I especially like about Breyers is that they use 100% grade A milk and cream from cows not treated with artificial growth hormones. Breyers colors and flavors come from natural sources, and their vanilla is sustainably sourced. Would you like to try Breyers Carb Smart when that next craving for something sweet and frozen hits? Look for it at all major retailers. Go to Breyers.com/cherrybomb to get a coupon so you can try Breyers Carb Smart today. That's Breyers.com/cherrybomb. Now, here's my conversation with Cicely Sierra. We'll hear from Mavis J later in the show. So you have a big pop-up that's happening this weekend that you and Mavis J are working on. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
We're a part of the Maison Yaki Black Entrepreneurship Series. We're the fifth pop-up in the space, and we're super excited. I mean, we're doing the food that we love. We're making fried chicken and pancakes. We're going to do a meatloaf burger. We're also doing like greens and cabbage, like our version of that. And then we're doing a black-eyed pea salad. And we're doing this really cool thing where every order comes with a particular hot sauce that we make.
Oh, yum. The menu sounded terrific. I saw it go online, and the meatloaf burger, you got me with that. So what's the secret to your meatloaf?
It doesn't have tomato sauce in it. I wanted it to feel very light and a little sweet, because sometimes meatloaf can feel like that, but feel like a cookout, like a hang. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's on a burger. We put our signature sweet heat sauce on it. We make like a spicy mayo, and it's simple. So it's just the meatloaf patty, a pepper jack cheese, a little bit of lettuce, the mayo, the hot sauce, and the bun.
So are you making the meatloaf as a loaf and then slicing it, or is it like a baby meatloaf on the bun?
It's like a baby meatloaf, because we like put it into the shape of like somewhat of a round to be able to fit on the patty, and then we grill it like a burger patty. But there's like this weird why behind the what of like when we make the sauce, how we add the sauce, at what point we add the sauce to the meat and all of this stuff, and then shape it.
Oh, it sounds so good. How do you feel about people who put ketchup on meatloaf?
I feel like I can understand why people make safe choices in life, because consistency is important. However, there's a like whole ass world that you're missing out on.
And you're serving that with sweet potato wedges?
We're doing sweet potato wedges, and they're seasoned with one of our spice rubs, our sweet and smoky spice rub. And then Mavis J makes these really cool pickles, and we actually make the pickling spice, and we'll start selling it again. So we're doing those pickles, because even though it's a pop-up and we are like have careers as kitchen people, we are not here to feed y'all. We're here to get you to buy the hot sauce. So you'll be able to buy everything. Yeah. And then with the pop-up, we're launching the pancake mix that we do. So you'll be able to get that too.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Most people know chicken and waffles, but you two do chicken and pancakes. What's the story behind that?
Waffles is not an African-American thing. You know, it's like a Dutch thing. So it's the hybrid of the two. And if you grow up in a lower class socioeconomic status, you didn't have a waffle iron. So like for me growing up, we didn't eat waffles like that unless it was like an Eggo by chance. And that's rare. We ate pancakes. Like you made pancakes because you had like a skillet that you could make pancakes and you fried chicken. So it is this weird conundrum, I think, for me. And a lot of people that I know, because we're like, where did this rumor start that Black people always ate fried chicken and waffles?
Where did it start?
So they say that it was the marrying of two things, like during slavery. So when the Dutch came over here, they brought the waffle iron with them. And so when the slaves would cook for them, they would fry the chicken, and then they would then also use the waffle iron to make waffles.
Oh, okay. Wow. What's the secret behind a great pancake?
Okay. So it's two things, right? So first, it has to taste good. The batter has to taste good. Sometimes people go into this with very bland batter. So, you know, like it's like throwing a little extra salt and some brown sugar in your batter. And then it's patience, because most people's pancakes are very like thin. So it's like, even if you buy it out of the box, you want to use less liquid so you have a fluffier pancake.
So that's fun that you'll be able to buy your packaged items as well. That's really cool. It runs through next weekend, right? The pop-up?
Yeah. So it actually starts tomorrow, but it's like a soft opening, but we're not really like come one, come all until Friday. And Mavis J is super excited because it's the 4th, which is Beyonce's birthday. So she's like, of course you want to start your pop-up on Beyonce's birthday. And then it runs all the way until the 13th. And we're closed on Monday and Tuesday.
Okay. So if people want to come and get your food, do they have to order it in advance? Can they just show up?
They can show up. I think at some point Mason Yaki will be doing like pre-orders with Resy. And then if you live locally, I think it's like a 2.5 mile radius. There's like this bot thing that we're going to post via DoorDash. But the best thing is just come, and then you can hang out and you can see our kids and get a little like social distance, like hang thing happening. Bring your mask. It's hilarious because our kids typically work the window, and they've done it for other people's pop-ups there. And they will tell you like, okay, you need to put your mask on. And then there's a restroom. So our small daughter, when you come in, she will take your temperature with the gun.
Oh, it is going to be a lot of fun. So as we mentioned, Food Plus People, that's your company. You two have some products. Tell us what the company is all about and how it came to be.
I think that we've both always lived in a space where we've had really great careers, but it's also been very apparent to us the lack of care and accessibility when it comes to the people working there and the people that look like us getting the food. You know, this idea of like, when I always hear people say like, shop the perimeter of the grocery store. And it's like, but that's whack, because some people cannot logistically afford to do so. So how can we create products that feed people that will go in a grocery store that's in a food desert, so they feel nourished and loved and cared for and don't have to feel like good, clean, simple products aren't for them because they can't afford it or whatever? Like, we wanted to hit the center of the aisle. And then we also we try to do it in a way for people who like either really, really hate cooking or don't have the time to cook. So we're meeting like both of those needs. So initially, like, it started with a dry soup mix where it was like, how can we create a product where you just have to add one thing, which is water? Because that's about the, like, whether it's on tap, whether it's in a filter, whether it's out of a bottle, whether it's out of like the kettle, how can we create products where people can just add one thing and be able to have a really great meal and feel taken care of and feel like we in particular care about them? So from there, we started talking about like the things that we love. So like hot sauce, and a lot of all of our hot sauces double as marinades. And so if you bought like our hot sauce and the flour mix that's seasoned, all you would need is like your fish or your fried chicken. So things like that, like how can we be the solution for a cooking experience, but also always, always be about Black culture.
And folks can buy these products on your website on Food Plus People. What's the plan for the brand? Will you be expanding with more? You mentioned your pancake mix is coming.
Yeah, so we're launching the pancake mix, and then we have another spice rub that's coming out. We're going to start doing like another flour that's completely like gluten-free and corn-free. And then we're going to go back into like, because the soup was like really hard. It was just a lot of like laboring to think through like, what, because we dehydrate, we grind everything. So it's like, how can we make something where like, if you add water or whatever the thing is, it all cooks up at the same time. So we'll go back to doing the soup mixes. And then we wanted to start with like just shelf stable products. So we're trying to exhaust like all of that space of like, if you don't have to put it in the refrigerator, you don't have to do all of these things. And then eventually we'll move into like items that are refrigerated. But the goal is like, I mean, we always want to be teaching, go back to teaching. I think that's something that both of us are super passionate about, holding the space for people to like learn and develop and grow. And I'm sure she will tell you when you speak to Mavis J, but she has a farm, her and her dad. They've had this like almost 100 acres like for 50 million years in their family. So I think at some point it's like going back and like getting more land, which they still farm that land, and just like getting more land. If I could convince her to like get this land in California, it would be great. But I also don't believe that that's going to happen.
Where's the family farm?
It's in Georgia. I think Georgia's beautiful, but I just really love Los Angeles, California. And my narrow mind is like, cool, cool, cool. All these places are great, but we need to go back. But I think that that's a real thing. Like that is something that we've talked about, is like possibly that being the place that we like settle and land long-term and just really buy some land and some space.
We should mention that your show on Black Food Folks got renewed, Drink Tank. It will be on Monday nights, 7 p.m. EST. Can you tell everybody what Drink Tank is all about?
I mean, it's funny because like initially, like if you watch like the earlier videos, it was like, we just want to hold space for people and like be a community and be a resource and like where people can come and ask questions, like if it's about costing or a resume, like this is the thing we want to do. And then it was like, so I had rosé today. It like really is a hang. So we do, I think that for us, like community is like really rooted in who we are. I definitely love like a good hang. And I think that that's like super important to us. So yes, there are very serious things that we talk about and how they affect Black people, people of color, women, queer people in the food space. But it's definitely rooted in like, what are you drinking? Us sitting around a table with you virtually and just saying all the things that either you can't say or like you wish you could say or that you would say if we were all together.
Well, it's very entertaining. And I have to say it's, you know, through some of the bleak moments of the past few months, it's been fun getting to watch you and Mavis J on that show. I will say my favorite parts are when you get scared that Clay is watching. Clay Williams, who's the co-founder of Black Food Folks, terrific photographer, great guy. And I never know whether you're fake scared of Clay or you're really scared of Clay.
No, we're really scared of Clay. Because even like even in the emails outside of it or like we'll text And he'll be like, do you want to talk to so-and-so? And we'll be like, no. And he'll be like, oh God. He's like, well, you have to be mindful that like, this is a space for everyone. And I'm like, mm-hmm, that's great. But then he'll also come on like when we're live and he'll join in our live. And that's how we really know. Or like one of two things, like he'll either come on or like, he'll be like, I'm going to sign off because I have a thing to do. And then Colleen will come on and be like, so what's happening in here? And I'm like, we've caused some trouble.
Colleen Vincent, who's the other co-founder of Black Food Folks.
We try to be super intentional. Like the people come in, we wave at them. We talk to everyone. If someone, you know, like, because when you play back a lot, you don't see the comments.
No.
So we try to be very intentional about like, oh, so-and-so said this. So even people in the comments will be like, you guys are going to get in trouble right now. And I'm like, I know, we're pushing the boundary.
Right. Everybody gets a little commentary. I think you've given one or two shout outs, which I have appreciated, you know, sitting at home with my cat. It's just nice to be seen by you guys.
Yeah, we really try to. I think that that's important. It's like this thing of, you know, we're so like, we're hella fortunate to have like each other and our two kids, even in the midst of like a whole ass pandemic where sometimes we can drive each other crazy. Like we have a pretty good time and not everyone has 1800 people in the house with them or too many people in the house with them they don't want to talk to. So we try to love on people so they don't feel alone or that they feel seen and they feel valued. And we try to like really respond to every comment just so people can feel like we're all in the room together. We're all hanging together and we're trying to give you as much joy as we can for an hour or two on a Monday night.
Well, a lot of joy comes out of that little iPhone screen. Black Food Folks has become a really amazing platform.
Yeah. And they've only been around, this is like going on their second year. And I think the thing is like, they've created a space. The space was not a thing where Black people can come together and in the food and beverage industry and see the diversity in the people that look like you. And they're the ultimate connector. Whether it's the thing we do on Monday night, whether it's sharing information, posting about what other things are happening within the community of people of color or people in general, of hiring, of support, like, oh, you need this thing, this person does that thing, or they may have some experience. Like even with us, like we had a friend who's not in food, but that was like, hey, I know a guy who wants to help out with websites during the pandemic. And so for us to like tell Clay and Colleen and them to tell other people, and they're so great at shining a light where there wasn't one, and not, we don't feel small, that there's so much joy and happiness, and it's just great. Like, it's like everybody looks forward to having this space where they can just say and do and be and not have to worry about like code switching or anything like that, but it could just be celebrating, you know, Black Food Folks.
And with everything that's been going on over the past few months, you sometimes don't know where to turn. And that Instagram account has really been a powerful, you know, place to turn to, I think, for a lot of people, even, you know, for myself, for white people who care about the space and the conversations. And I just really appreciate it.
Yeah. And I think that that's great too, because they also have created a space that like centers in Blackness and doesn't apologize for that, but has allowed for a lot of people to come in and sit and ask questions and learn and grow and develop. We've seen so many interesting people. Like, it was funny because on Monday nights, they're very disrespectful to me. And well, I don't want to say anybody, but one of them is in the room with me right now. And because I like sugar and butter on my grits, the way she's shaking her head. And it's funny because like one of the white guys we know who's like a blogger, he was like, listen, I eat butter and sugar on my grits too, but I didn't think that I was going to help your case with all the people in the room. And I'm just like, it's so great that like so many people can come in here and just be a part of a community and honor a community. Like it's so dope what Clay and Colleen do.
Not to mess with you, but I did think one of the funniest moments was when you talked about your neighbor who thought Mavis J was your
my daughter.
It's almost like it was classic television, except it was IG Live.
It was insane because the way she asked me that question, because it was, we were getting out of the car, she was walking her dog, and it was our two daughters, Madison, who will be 13, and Marley, who will be 9. And she looked, and we had been talking for at least like 10 to 15 minutes. And she looks at me and she said, "So where's your other daughter?" And I said, "Did one of them get back in the car?" And she was like, "You know, the one who's the cook." And I said, "Ma'am, now I know you don't mean." I was like, "You mean my fiance?" And she was like, "Oh." So now every day, like I like to make sure to leave the house with my hair combed, makeup on, an outfit that is semi-sensible.
This is a good segue into the fact that before you were in food, you were actually an actress. And I didn't know that in the beginning. Is that maybe one of the reasons why you're so good and so comfortable on IG Live?
Well, a lot of people actually don't know that I was an actress because I often, even if I talk about it, I'd be like, "Oh, my first career." So most people probably think like I had some office job or something. So I did Power Rangers, and then like most people will then later recognize me for this TV show that I was on for like 5 years called One on One. And I like literally grew up on that show. But no, because Mavis is like, which is about to be on Netflix next month. They're relaunching they had done like 10 old Black original sitcoms, and that's one of them. So it's like one of the last ones still out. So it's super exciting. But I'm also, this is going to sound really crazy, but I'm like an extroverted introvert, and I actually get very nervous around people. But I think that I'm also like reckless enough to just say the thing that I'm thinking, and people don't take me seriously, and that's why they think it's funny.
Tell us how you transitioned from acting to food.
I always grew up around food. Like I have my aunts and uncles are cooks. I can trace my family back like 7 generations. And my great, 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 great grandfather 7 generations ago was a slave on a plantation. And he was a cook. So it's always been this idea of like cooking and community that's been like a through line in my family. Around the last season of One on One, which was like 2005, it would be this thing where we would go out and do events. And everybody would be talking about like the red carpet and all these things. And I'd be like, I just want to go in the kitchen and see what they're making. And so when the show finished, because I had started acting so young, and it was something that my mom was like, if you don't love it, you don't have to do it. I've always had this thing of, if you don't love it, don't do it. So like when One on One had finished, I was like, okay, I want to do something that I love, and it's food. And because I was raised to know that you only do the thing that you love, like I need to take this seriously. So as I was transitioning, before the show was fully done, I had started doing dinner parties and all of these things. And then finally I was like, okay, I think I'm gonna go to culinary school and like really make this a career. And I did. I went to Le Cordon Bleu in Los Angeles. And then while I was there, I did a double internship with the LA Times Test Kitchen. So my background is actually R&D and food styling and like working for the Times. And that was like my favorite job. I mean, I love what we do now, but this idea of like food styling, talking to food people, to people who love food, and like creating a space that lives on paper about that is probably, and like testing recipes is hands down my jam. I never looked back. And so I started doing that. And it was ironic enough that like, as I graduated and then began to freelance for the Times, I started doing food styling more frequently and went into like doing like TV shows and movies and music videos and things like that. And that got weird for a second because like I would pull up and people would be like, "Oh, you're acting." And I was like, "No."
You started a business with your mom, right?
Yeah. So once I stopped, like, and then I started doing food trucks And that's in Los Angeles where I met Mavis J. And then moved to the Bay. And my mom and I joined La Cucina together. And we opened our business, Pinky and Reds, which she runs full time. We had gotten the opportunity and they were like, would you be interested in like opening something on Cal's campus in Berkeley? And so we moved into like the MLK Student Union building and we were like, okay, we'll put everything on a sandwich. I mean, like we were doing, or she still is, like greens, yams, dirty rice on a sandwich. We did like catfish and spaghetti, like all the things that we were raised on a sandwich. And so because there was such like a lack of diversity on the campus, and La Cucina had done this partnership, so it was like us and five other women of color, like a girl named Pinky was doing pastries, and then there was an empanada place, and then there was a Vietnamese place, and there was a Syrian family who are refugees that were doing Syrian food, that it allowed for us to be a source of identification for people. So the more, and because we're like so like heavily community people, our girls started going upstairs to the multicultural center and like volunteering and like all of these things. So then it was like, okay, if we're really in this space and we see the need for representation, like people could come and sit and hang and like study and do their homework and we would feed them. But like, if you couldn't afford to like meals, we would still take care of you. Then we started doing all of our meat was halal meat to make sure that everyone could eat there. And then we only hired students of color that went to school on campus. And then it later turned into like women of color who were on campus that were students. And then that became very like controversial. Like people felt like we didn't deserve to be in that space as Black people. And so then there was like a change.org petition that went up. So it wasn't guaranteed that we were going to stay in the space. And it was like super nerve wracking. And like, so we had to go to the board and they had to put it up for a vote, and all of the students like really rallied behind the restaurant. And then like shortly after that, I ended up moving to New York, but then she won like one of the best fried chicken sandwiches in the Bay Area. So it's been pretty great. Like it was wild. I think that we pushed a lot of boundaries and fought for people to be seen in a way that they may not have been represented before.
What would you say you learned from your mom?
I think one thing I will say is like, it's never too late. Like the thing that you really want to do in your heart, it's never too late. Your dream never expires. When I lived in Los Angeles and we were kind of far apart, she would just text me and be like, I hope that God creates a miracle in your life and you don't miss it. And so for me, it was like not missing those things, kind of being tuned in and like being present, especially like being in food and always being a person who's worked for, you know, 800 years in my life, to stop and be aware of the good things that were happening around me and to fight. Like my mom has always been a like very no, state your opinion with your whole chest and be firm. So I think that is partially where I get that from.
Well, speaking of miracles, you have two little miracles in your life. You've mentioned your daughters, but you really involve your two kids in your business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like Marley, she has an email. She has a company email. She does a lot of the packing. She has a interest in food, and so she'll sit when we're in the kitchen and she'll help with like the spice rubs and the products, and she's really like, as time has gone on, had a like a deep desire for cooking, but they're always there. I mean, we've been fortunate enough to get to a place in our careers where I'll be like, we have kids and they will be here. It's all they've ever known. It's kind of cool, but it's like they've only ever seen us work in like own businesses and things like that. So they definitely want to participate and like want to be hands-on. Like for the pop-up, Madison was like, okay, so who's working the window? Because that's my thing. Whereas Marley's like, I'm making the Kool-Aid and like bottling the drinks and like doing the late. So they, yeah, I mean, they're great. They're very serious about it. They're just as invested as we are. It's funny. They will hustle it harder than we will. Like we'll be talking to someone like, but have you tried the hot sauce? Because if you haven't, go to the website, and I'll just be like, oh my God, they have no shame. It is their company.
I love that it's a family business.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Mavis J. But first, I want to tell you a little bit more about Pass the Spatula. It's the first ever magazine produced by the students of Food and Finance High School, New York City's only culinary-focused public high school, and it's amazing. Cherry Bomb worked on the magazine in partnership with the students and the Food Education Fund 501c3, and it was an incredible experience. One of the students we worked with is Cicely and Mavis J's daughter, Madison, a very talented young illustrator. You can purchase a copy of Pass the Spatula for $10 at their website, passthespatula.com, and help support their food media program. Speaking of Pass the Spatula, we have a very special Who's the Bomb for you right now.
Hi, my name is Jade Adkins, and I am the editor-in-chief of the Pass the Spatula magazine and a senior at Food and Finance High School in New York City. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Christina Tosi from Milk Bar in Brooklyn. Because she is so energetic and fun, Christina, I can tell, values and finds happiness when baking, and I admire her for that. It was an honor to be a part of one of her Instagram lives and bake with her. I would certainly love to do it again.
Thank you, Jade. You're the bomb, too, and good luck this semester. Now, for Mavis J. Sanders of Food Plus People.
Mavis J., so how are you feeling? I know you two are working really hard on the pop-up right now.
We had a moment today where I was like, everything in my body was aching. It was like, just kind of like, make it to the door, make it to the door. Like, we were coming home. And then Cicely wasn't sure whether or not she had left her phone in the car. It wasn't that much of a trek, but it was more than I wanted to trek back. And instinctually my body just turned around and went, because it was like, you don't even like have the thought of, I'm too tired to go back to the car. Otherwise you're not going to go back to the car. So just go, just do what needs to be done. I think it's been so long since I've actually like had to like be like in that mental space, but it still happens.
So tell me what you're excited about for the pop-up.
I'm excited to celebrate Black excellence. I'm excited to see Cicely in her element.
How did you two come up with the menu? Was it super collaborative?
Psych. No, it's not. It's all hers. It's all her menu.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's totally her love stuff. What does it matter? Why? Because here's the thing that happens, right? Like, she's like the brainchild of everything. And I get a little bit more of like the backside, like the workhorse of things. And that's perfectly fine. The thing is that people see me executing things and they go, oh, it must be hers. And then I'm like, no, it's not. It's not mine. You know what I mean? Like, it's hers. Like, it's totally hers. We collaborate on things as much as like, does this need more salt? Does this need more vinegar? You know what I mean? Or, hey, could this be different like this, or these kind of cuts and stuff like that? I think anything that we're doing for the pop-up, there's nothing on it that's specifically mine. The pickles?
What's the secret to a good pickle?
A lot of people, they just want to do like, oh, I'm going to put this like weird brine mix on it. And like old pickling spice has been sitting in the back of the grocery aisle for the last 17 years. You got to blow dust off the top of it. Don't do that. Make your own, like do your own thing. Like do what's gonna feel good to you. Don't follow anybody else's recipes for like what you want this pickle to taste like. You got it, go for it.
I'm psyched to try it this weekend. Now you have some serious food chops. While Cicely was establishing herself on the West Coast, you were on the East Coast and went to the Culinary Institute of America, right? How did you wind up at CIA? What was your experience once you got there?
I mean, I think any school, any like educational process, honestly, is like you get out of it what you put into it. Like, I honestly do believe that. I think when I was younger, a lot of what I was doing was about trying to get access to places I wouldn't normally have access to. When I started my career earlier on, I had a lot of no's because I didn't have some super fancy white person co-signing me. And so I didn't have space, I had access to space. And so I knew that if I went to like the most legit school, that piece of paper would get me into a door somewhere. And that's kind of how I started.
And you worked at some major places. You were at Blue Hill, at Stone Barns, Untitled. Lots of changes at all those places right now. Have you been keeping up with that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the whole entire industry is upside down, honestly. I don't know if I work at those places so much for the pedigree. I mean, yes, the pedigree of those places are important, but it's more about the mentality of the leadership and not necessarily the leadership itself, but the thought processes of the people who were leading those spaces. You know what I mean? I thought that Dan was incredible for the fact that he was like, if I can't find it, I'll create it. And I'll create it here. And I'll bring together some of the best minds to like bring this into fruition. And I hadn't ever experienced anybody who was of that mindset when it comes to leadership at Untitled. Yes, Michael Anthony, rad dude, but Suzanne Cupps is phenomenal. And her leadership style is like unmatched. She just exudes leadership. Those were the things that I wanted to learn. And so it wasn't necessarily about where it was important. The access that I would get going to work at those places, but it was also about like who was at the helm.
Give us some examples of what you learned from Suzanne.
Like, she has an optimism about her. She has like obviously has a vision. You know what I mean? And you're working towards that vision. No one ever gets like, she's very empowering. No one ever gets talked down to. She's very accommodating. I was talking to her one day and she was like saying that she had somebody who was always coming in late, and instead of like berating that person or like seeing something as being wrong with that person, she just changed that person's schedule. Not in a bad way, but just like pushed it back an hour. And that person was then always on time because something was going on. Like, she sees people. That's what it is. Like, she never loses people's personhood from every single person who's in on her team. They're always a priority, you know? And then doing that and still making excellent food.
Suzanne is now the chef at 232 Bleecker in New York City. So you had this fine dining experience, but then your next move was kind of unexpected. You went and were a partner in a food truck, albeit an award-winning food truck.
with a bunch of other like young cooks who were coming out of fine dining. I think for them, it was about business, but for me, it was about access. It was about how do we take all these ideas that we've learned in these fine dining spaces and feed people who don't have access to them. I think when we were in LA, it was a lot of like gyms and movie sets and WeWork kind of spaces. And that was great. But what made me step away from fine dining was that I wasn't feeding people who looked like me, and my parents couldn't afford to do the restaurants that I was working in and didn't make sense to me anymore. And then still in the food truck, when it came down to it, like after we'd gotten all the accolades and we were hitting a stride and we were like, really like, okay, how do we build this? When it became obvious that it wasn't going to focus on feeding people who like really needed like some extra care and really needed the changes in the food systems to happen. And like, if we weren't going to be that change, I didn't want to be a part of that anymore. And I think that like pretty much everyone on our team at that point, we were kind of like ready to go in different directions, and not in a bad way. Like, we were young, like still everybody was, you know, under 30, and we had no debt and the truck was doing great, and it was like, okay, cool, like we can dissolve this and like figure out how to do our talents, like, or you know, work on our talents in other ways.
I did not ask Cicely this, but I think she said you two met in LA. How did you meet?
On food trucks. Yeah, it was pretty fantastic. She used to work on a food truck that sold pudding. Yeah, she started pudding, and it was expensive pudding. They would sell like 4 ounces of pudding for like $10, and then be like $2 like per topping. It'd be like gummy bears or something like that. You'd be like, this is wild. Why would I put gummy bears? Anyway.
It sounds like a racket. It was like the pudding racket.
Yeah, it was a racket. Anyway, so food trucks in LA, like whenever you do anywhere, the big parties or scenes or whatever, you have to like really be making money to get the best spots because they charge a whole lot of money, like $700 for you to park in the good like VIP spot, right? And so they always had like the best spot. Like, they had it on lock every single month. Always, always, always. And it was so weird. They had this window that was like unusually high. You had to like look up and like reach your money into the sky. She was like Rapunzel sitting up there. Anyway, so we parked, and like we hadn't like got hit yet or anything like that. It was still kind of like during the day a little bit, and so I jumped off the truck and we were like set up, and I was kind of looking around, and I was just so captivated how like no other trucks had any business, but there were so many people standing in front of this pudding truck in line to grab this 4 ounces of pudding. And there was this woman who was just like working this entire crowd from this like window in the sky, and I was just like, who is she? And I like sent over one of my business partners to like go get her name right quick. And then she kind of moseyed over to say hi and grab food. And then I like went and jumped on the back of her truck. And I was like, hey, what up? How are you? She was all blushing and shy and stuff. So I was like, cool. This is good. It's a wrap.
That's a love story. So you two wind up in New York. You're back in New York. You launched Food Plus People. Cicely told us a little bit about what Food Plus People is all about. In her words, can you tell us in yours?
I was like working all these jobs that were supposed to be about helping the people and seeing the people who needed the most. It wasn't happening. You know, it was a bunch of shenanigans. And the top of the year was just the perfect opportunity to be like, yo, bump this. Like, let's make it happen for ourselves. Let's see, let's do this how we would want it, like how we would want to be seen. Let's make sure that we pay homage to our culture. Let's make sure that we do things that are specifically geared towards maybe parts of our culture that are overlooked or that are seen as like not the greatest. But for us, it's the little things that make everything worth it.
You know, you said earlier, Mavis J, about the restaurant industry being upside down. And I think it's sort of the food world in total, you know, restaurants, food media, you name it, it's a revolution, an evolution, an implosion. What's your take on what's going on right now?
I think my frustrations are still the same. I'm hopeful for change because a lot more people are, and I'm not saying like that I'm happy that more people are experiencing this, but I feel like it is now more apparent to a lot of people. People who may have looked down on people who were at the farmer's market trying to like get the extra $2 on the vegetables because they got SNAP or, you know, whatever deals are set up, depending on where you are, they're having to learn how to navigate those same things and learning like how difficult it was to even get benefits in the first place. And oftentimes like you're in those situations not because of something, or you're in those situations because of something that it is completely out of your control. I think it's like humbled a lot of people in general. And I think a lot of people have started to like rework how they think about food. And I think that's very important. There's a lot of amazing people who've been doing this work all along, and they need the help. They needed more voices on it. I think they're getting that now. I'm hopeful that, you know, things will change. You know, the tide will turn.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Cicely Sierra and Mavis J. Sanders of Food Plus People. Don't forget their pop-up starting today, September 4th, at Maison Yaki in Brooklyn. I'll be online for that meatloaf burger, and Cicely, I promise I will not put ketchup on it. If you can't make the pop-up, pop over to foodpluspeople.com to pick up some of their hot sauces, flour mixes, and more. Thank you to today's sponsor, Breyers Carb Smart. Would you like to support Radio Cherry Bomb? Check out the official Cherry Bomb memberships at cherrybomb.com. Radio Cherry Bomb is edited by Kat Corelli. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra-La-La. Radio Cherry Bomb is produced by Cherry Bomb Media. Hang in there, everybody, and thank you for listening. You are the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.